Good morning and welcome to the NC Warren conference call. All participants will be in a listen-only mode. Should you need assistance, please signal a conference specialist by pressing the star key followed by zero. After today's presentation, there will be an opportunity to ask questions. To ask a question, you may press star then one on your telephone keypad. Please note, this event is being recorded. I would now like to turn the conference over to Jim Warren, Executive Director of NC Warren. Please go ahead, sir.
Thank you, and good morning, and thanks for everybody for joining us. As he said, my name is Jim Warren, Executive Director of NC Warren. We're a climate justice and clean energy watchdog group based in Durham, North Carolina. This press conference features two internationally prominent experts, a climate scientist and a policy leader, who are calling for a halt to the expansion of natural gas pipelines and power plants by Duke Energy and other major utilities across the U.S. These experts will make a strong case that we must stop expanding the use of so-called natural gas for several reasons, including the climate crisis, public health, and economics. First, a little background. NC Warren is 31 years old. Since 2003, our top focus has been climate justice and challenging Charlotte-based Duke Energy to stop making climate change worse. We work with many fine allies, and together we've gained a lot of ground. But in 2019, the climate crisis is well underway. For us, climate urgency has two meanings. One is the urgency of millions of people already being hurt, many being devastated, and the impacts are disproportionately harming the people who are not generating the most emissions through high consumption. And secondly, the crisis is getting worse and approaching an ominous tipping point. Now, good news is that many states and utilities are replacing natural gas quite rapidly with renewables paired with energy storage. But Duke Energy and other monopolies are projecting to build gas pipelines and hundreds of gas-fired power plants. Today's speakers began working with NC Warren staff and volunteers several months ago to address Governor Roy Cooper's clean energy plan. And along the way, it became clear from Dr. Schindel's findings that the case for stopping gas expansions is more powerful than ever, not just in North Carolina, but across the entire nation. Their letter to Governor Cooper, which is being sent today, was co-signed by 27 professionals formerly with the U.S. Environmental Protection Agency, and that includes Dale Everts, one of our speakers today. I want to thank Drew Schindel and Dale Everts for their courage in speaking out at this critical time, especially because their message runs directly counter to the industry PR that's been so successful in painting natural gas as benign. Our state, our nation, and our world community are at a critical threshold, and we must finally begin opening up the discussion of our plight and begin making wise decisions that aren't dominated by powerful corporations. I am honored and grateful to work with these two esteemed climate experts. Before we get started with Dr. Schindel, let me say the letter to the governor and today's press release will be live at ncwarren.org just following the press conference. Now, introducing Dr. Drew Schindel is quite a task. He is a Nicholas Professor of Earth Sciences at Duke University, and from 1995 to 2014, he was at the NASA Goddard Institute for Space Studies and taught at Columbia University. He has a long list of accomplishments and awards and has testified on climate issues before both houses of the U.S. Congress. He was a coordinating lead author on IPCC reports in 2013 and 2018, and he chairs the Scientific Advisory Panel to the Climate and Clean Air Coalition of Nations and Organizations. Dr. Schindel is considered one of the leading global experts on methane's impacts on the climate. Good morning, Dr. Schindel.
Good morning, Jim, and good morning to all those who are on the line. Thank you for calling in today. And today we have sent our letter to the governor, and we're urging Governor Cooper and leaders across the United States to stop the expansion of new gas pipelines and power plants. I've been working on this area for decades now, and things that interest me the most are intersection between different impacts on society from fossil fuel use. And so it's climate and public health and what toxic pollutants do to people that breathe them and to crops that are exposed to them. And when you look at the overall environmental impacts of using natural gas and expanding it, my conclusion is that it's too damaging to North Carolina residents to make this something that we want to continue with. Now, the state clean energy plan, I find this laudable in many ways. There are a lot of good efforts in there by the governor and the Department of Environmental Quality. But there's a serious gap in that it allows for the addition of large amounts of new fossil fuel. There's no way that building new natural gas is compatible with the IPCC analysis that Jim just mentioned that I was a co-author on from last year, which really says we have to get to net zero carbon emissions globally by the middle of the century to avoid enormous damages from climate changes. And so this is billions of people subject to extreme heat and hundreds of millions to water shortages, et cetera. Now, getting globally to that kind of target by the middle of the century means developed nations like the United States have to move more quickly. We have the capabilities. We are responsible for more of the pollution. And so we really need to be getting there by around, say, 2040 or so, which is only 2 decades from now. Building new fossil infrastructure now is not compatible with that. The target of net zero by the middle of the century just doesn't allow for these new CO2 sources. But when you use natural gas, you also get methane. It's just not possible to have a 100% leak-free system. And so some of that unburned methane comes out upstream at the oil and gas extraction sites. It comes out from processors, from storage tanks, from pipelines. And that methane is a very powerful greenhouse gas. It's one of the main reasons that we are so far from the targets that the countries of the world have committed to, is that methane is rising much faster than we expected. It's more off track than any of the other major pollutants in our efforts to stabilize climate change. Worldwide, methane emissions are not just causing climate change, but they are also making ozone toxic to people, toxic to plants, killing hundreds of thousands of people every year, our emissions of methane, and wiping out millions of tons of crop yield, right? So this is affecting farmers all across the United States. This is affecting essentially anybody that breathes. The true cost of electricity, if you really figure in all of these environmental damages, is more than double using gas what you get using renewables. And so what we really see is that the economic case for using natural gas is even without taking into account these environmental damages, is really being undermined by the continued price declines in renewables. And so if you count the damages, you would never use coal or gas. If you even ignore the damages, then you're building a kind of archaic infrastructure that's rapidly being outpaced with recent bids for new construction of solar, including battery storage, coming in at around 2 to 3 cents per kilowatt hour in both California and Colorado. And so there's no way that you are going to build a fossil fuel power plant that's going to be that inexpensive. So North Carolina ratepayers are going to be paying more for this use of fossil fuel, for the continued reliance on the old techniques. Now, instead, if we don't build out more gas infrastructure and use renewables, we get public health benefits, we get climate benefits, we don't have storms that are as damaging to our coast, we don't have as many people getting asthma and as many kids and elderly people suffering from poor public health, and we even get climate benefits fairly quickly because methane is relatively short-lived. So there's a lot of good news if we transition to renewables, but it takes overcoming the status quo and overcoming inertia. So the time is now to stop building more fossil fuel infrastructure across the country. We're urging Governor Cooper to take the lead and halt new pipeline and power plants in North Carolina, providing an example for the rest of the country and even for the rest of the world. I'm happy to take questions after Dale chimes in here, and thank you for tuning in again.
Thank you. That was Dr. Drew Schindel, climate scientist from Duke University. Now I'll introduce Dale Everts. By the way, there's more on these fellows' accomplishments in the press advisory and on our website. Dale Everts is a climate and air quality expert. He led the climate and international group at the U.S. EPA from 2006 to 2018, where he led international efforts on air pollution and climate change in multiple nations. Since 2000, he's played a central role in a team of U.S. experts working with China to improve air quality and reduce climate pollutants. And Dale has continued this work even after retiring from EPA last year. Welcome, Mr. Everts.
Thank you, Jim, and thank you for those of you who called in for this press conference. I look forward to your questions. I come, as Jim has mentioned, I come from a regulatory office at EPA, so I have that perspective. And one of the things we were always called on to do was to balance the public health and environmental damages of different rules. With the costs and benefits to society and the economy as a whole, and looking at what we're proposing here, halting the expansion of new natural gas for electricity in North Carolina across the U.S., I see it doing three things. One, saving lives and improving public health and well-being, saving money for consumers and those of us who pay electric bills, and creating a steady stream of good-paying jobs. Drew has mentioned in good detail what the overall climate and public health impacts are. And what I'd like to talk about briefly or just cover here is how much money customers would be saving. As Drew did mention, renewable energy is matched with storage is now cheaper than gas-fired electricity, even counting only the direct cost, not the indirect damages to public health and climate, and this continuing rapid decline in solar, wind, battery storage costs means that renewables will likely be lower than the cost of 90% of the gas plants proposed in the U.S. by the time those plants are built and put into service. Let me note that Duke Energy is one of the nation's largest energy corporations and among the largest in the world, based in Charlotte. Has recently announced that it would be at net zero emissions by 2050, but that contradicts what it's actually proposing in its plans to the state to keep building dozens of these gas power plants fueled by fracked gas and continuing to push to build the infrastructure, the Atlantic Coast Pipeline, that would deliver that gas. We really can't stay at a safe level of climate change if we keep expanding fossil fuel use. Coal, we know, is declining very rapidly, but this replacement of coal with fracked gas, natural gas power, is a poor second cousin to that. We really do need to leap into the less costly renewable energy pathway. It will save us in the long term quite a bit of money on our electric bills. As Drew mentioned, the 2 to 3 cents per kilowatt hour for new solar and battery storage contracts that are being let out there are far cheaper than what we'd pay for a new gas-fired power plant. And it also creates jobs. About right now, as of 2018, there's about 3.3 million Americans working in clean energy, outnumbering the number of jobs in the fossil fuel industry by 3 to 1. And the U.S. Bureau of Labor Statistics forecasts that America's two fastest growing jobs through 2026 will be solar installer at over 100% growth, and wind technician at almost 100% growth. So what I'm seeing in you know, by joining, by calling for this permanent moratorium on gas expansions and asking our governor here in North Carolina to take the lead, this is a very practical next step. It's good for our health and climate, good for our pocketbooks, and of course creates a sustainable stream of good paying jobs for us off into the future. So again, I'm glad to I'll look forward to your questions, glad to try to answer them, and thank you again for tuning in.
Thank you. That was Dale Everts, longtime climate official at the U.S. EPA. And again, before we go to Q&A, the letter and today's press release will be live at ncwarn.org just after this press conference. So, operator, I think we can take some questions at this point.
Thank you, sir. We will now begin our question and answer session. To ask a question, you may press star then one on your telephone keypad. If you're using a speakerphone, please pick up your handset before pressing the keys. To withdraw your question, please press star then two. At this time, we'll just pause momentarily to assemble that roster. The first question will be from Travis Fain with WRAL. Please go ahead.
And good morning, or late morning. I have two questions. I'll just drop them both here at once. The human cost that is broken down in the letter. There is some language in the Clean Power Plan, the draft that the DEQ released a while back, that seems to say stuff like that will be factored into decision-making in the future. I wonder if you can speak to how effective that language, if put into practice, would be at accomplishing what you're talking about here, where you figure the per kilowatt hour cost, but you calculate in all these other human and economic factors.
Is there a second question?
The second question is, you know, what do y'all expect the governor to do? I mean, what power does he have to say, hey, Duke Energy, don't build any more gas plants?
Right. So this is Drew Schindel. Maybe I will take that first one and then turn it over to Dale for the second one, if that suits.
Sounds good.
My feeling is that the language is helpful but insufficient, and it's good that the state is moving in the direction of saying these kind of things will be factored in, but in fact this is very similar to what the U.S. federal government does, and we evaluate what they are called social costs related to climate change, and we do not necessarily take action based on those. We evaluate them, but they are not the same as, say, a carbon tax or a carbon fee, where polluters explicitly are charged these costs, which is what kind of legal arguments and legal precedent says is the kind of best way and sensible way to internalize the cost of pollution. So just saying it will be factored in, the devil is really in the details. And if it were to be factored in by imposing a fee that's equal to the cost, so you pay for damages, then that would be great. And then I think that the industry would naturally move towards renewables. If it's factored in the way that the federal government has been doing it, which is saying, oh, we'll look at that, but then we don't actually impose this price that we calculate anywhere, and so people go about their merry way, then, yeah, clearly it's not going to have much effect. So it's a step in the right direction, but as written, currently insufficient, in my opinion.
All right. I think that covers me. Thank you.
Let me answer the other question, which is what can the governor do? Well, I think one of the things we can commend the governor for doing is issuing an executive order last fall, EO80, to initiate a process for developing a clean energy plan for the state and getting all of the executive agencies within the state working on this. The Clean Energy Plan, as it came out, as you said, has a number of things in it that will be useful over the coming period to follow, but it will require the leadership from the governor, and he does have a bully pulpit to continue focusing the state's attention, utilities' attention, on some of the really good ideas that came out of that process. It was a large stakeholder process. Again, I really commend the governor for undertaking that. However, as Drew alluded to, the devil will be in the details, in the implementation, in this case, of those details that are laid out in the plan. And he will necessarily need to continue to push his agencies and the legislature through legislation, through policies that he can issue on his own, as well as a number of other things that he can take, for instance, leading the restructuring of the state electricity system, getting more stakeholder processes going on the various details of that energy plan as it is implemented.
And this is Jim. Let me add briefly to that last answer that, the bully pulpit is huge. And the governor indicated to WREL a couple of weeks ago that we should consider a moratorium in the near term on gas. And so he's thinking about it. You've got the Atlantic Coast Pipeline construction stalled for looks like 2 years now, probably at least. You've got public opinion really beginning to build around the idea that we can't keep going forward with gas. So the governor has great power with the legislature. He's got power through the regulatory offices. And as Dale mentioned, he could lead a restructuring of the electricity system as need be. Finally, I'll say he has a lot of power through his good relationships with the CEOs of Duke Energy and Dominion and others, too. Thank you. Got another question?
Okay, our next question will be from Chris Knight with Argus Media. Please go ahead.
Hi, this is a question for Jim. So what interstate gas pipelines in North Carolina do you think shouldn't be built? Are there any specific projects? And what do you think the governor could do to prevent them from being built?
Yeah, good question. The there are a couple of them on the planning board. The Atlantic Coast Pipeline that I mentioned is huge. It would be a $20 billion project over 20 years just for North Carolina customers. That hasn't been reported much. We did the analysis and showed the governor that, and because Duke Energy would actually, their customers would pay for well over half of that project. And so that one is stalled. For nearly a year, construction has been stalled because Duke and Dominion tried to cut corners in building it. So the fate of that project, if it ever is completed, would end up leading to energy prices just far higher than would be competitive. There's also a Mountain Valley Pipeline extension proposed to come into North Carolina, and both of these would be bringing fracked gas from Appalachia. Was there another part of your question that I get all of that?
Yeah, I mean, so those have FERC certificates. So what could the governor do to block them? Are you proposing like a Section 401 denial or like some sort of thing to do with the 11th Amendment?
Yes, he has actually a Section 401 appeal on his desk right now that came from attorneys and citizen groups that he should be considering, and it's based on corners that were cut initially with the project and changing information since the project began. And so he has that potential right there, and especially while that project is stalled by the federal courts. He is governor. We are in extraordinary times. We need governors to stretch out and take measures that would benefit all of the public.
Thanks.
Once again, if you'd like to ask a question, please press star then one. Our next question comes from Quinn Bonner with Good News. Please go ahead.
Hey, this is Lynn Bonner, News and Observer. Is storage technology advanced enough to carry the load without natural gas? Part of the rationale for natural gas is that it's needed to power things when the wind isn't blowing and the sun isn't shining. Second question, too. The moratorium that you're suggesting, is that would that include the two natural gas plants that are set to come online in the next 3 years?
So this is Drew. I could take that first question in particular. And, you know, you're right that one of the reasons that the utilities often promote gas as baseload fuel to help, baseload power rather, to help them deal with intermittency in renewables. And so there's two parts to that question. One is, do we have any other base load? And of course we do. We have nuclear and we have hydro. So that's not the only source of, you know, dispatchable power. But the other is that, of course, as batteries have expanded enormously, you know, just a decade ago, there were essentially no utility scale battery storage available. And now it's become almost routine with a number of future bids. You know, the ones I was citing are between 2 and 3 cents per kilowatt hour, including storage, and this allows it to be kind of dispatchable. So no, that doesn't 100% solve the problem, right? You only have a certain number of hours of storage, and if you have no sun for, you know, 3 days, there are still issues. But in particular, large utilities like Duke Energy, you know, they cover a wide service area. And when renewables are incorporated in a relatively, in a thoughtful way, by expanding coverage across a large area, you know, it's pretty much always windy or sunny somewhere in a large service area. So instead of investing money in pipelines to bring gas, they can invest money in transmission, which connects an ever larger service area and allows you to have a larger fraction of renewables. And so Duke's current fraction of renewables is very, very small, just down in the single digits, whereas other places, Germany and South Australia and, you know, other places around the world are up at 4 or 5 times that high. So we can certainly, you know, we have to worry about these things as we get to enormous levels of, say, the vast majority of our power coming from intermittent renewables. This becomes critical, but we don't really have to take that as a key issue as long as we maintain some hydro and nuclear until we get up to, you know, maybe several decades down the line.
This is Jim. Perfect answer. Let me add a couple of points to that, Lynn. The North Carolina solar companies are developing and trying to develop more battery storage. Duke Energy has impeded their growth. Much of the industry realizes that the real future is moving toward more distributed energy on homes, on buildings, on parking lots, all over the place, and matching that with storage near the point of use. And that is something that you may have seen in NC Warren's Clean Path 2025 strategy is laid out, where we can begin to replace coal and gas with renewables plus storage. Duke Energy has opposed even debating that type of strategy. And finally, I'll say Duke Energy already has an enormous storage facility on its North Carolina, South Carolina system. It's a pumped storage facility at the border of the two states that is the equivalent of the capacity of more than two nuclear power plants. Readily dispatchable is pumped hydro storage, upper and lower reservoirs, and they have it on the system. And their plant manager boasted a few years ago that it is perfectly suited to help with the intermittency issues of renewables.
And let me go ahead, Jim.
Sure. No. Go ahead, Dale.
Well, and as somebody who participated in the stakeholder process for the Clean Energy Plan, there's a number of measures that were or recommendations that came through in that plan that follow through on what both Drew and Jim mentioned. So the governor could play a key role in making sure that Duke Energy is more friendly, and there are measures in place to allow for a distributed energy system, a system that is favorable to putting storage in place to correct these intermittency issues, as Drew mentioned. So it's, these are things that are in line that could be done fairly quickly without having to spend more money on the gas infrastructure.
Lynn, you had a first question that, frankly, I didn't. Could you repeat it?
Oh, sure. There are two natural gas plants set to come online in the next 3 years, and I'm wondering if your moratorium proposal would includes those as well. I mean, would you want to stop those from coming online?
My opinion would be yes. That's, we have to start now.
Okay. And who's speaking, please?
I'm sorry, Jim Warren.
Okay.
That would be my opinion, but Dale and Drew may have their own.
Well, I agree with Jim in that if you put something in place now, you're going to end up with a stranded asset in 10, 15 years,
right?
Because pricing, continued increase in prices of gas will make it no longer tenable, as has happened with coal now, no longer tenable to even and competitive with solar, wind, and storage. So if we bring it online in 2 to 3 years, in maybe 10 years, customers and shareholders are going to be holding the bag and having to pay for something they can't operate.
Thanks. Can I ask another question about the Transco pipeline? I mean, isn't it too late to do anything about that?
It is. It's been in operation for many years. This is Jim Warren, and it is bringing largely fracked gas or shale gas from the Gulf region. But that's what the main focus of today is: new gas infrastructure. Addressing existing pipelines and power plants is a step later, but we certainly have to stop adding to the problem at this point and then begin doing these other things we were just referring to begin phasing out fossil fuels altogether.
Great. Thank you.
Dale or Drew, add to that? Or
no.
Thank you once again. If you'd like to ask a question, simply press star then one on your telephone. At this time, I'm showing no further questions, so I'll turn it back to you, Mr. Warren, for any closing remarks you might have.
Okay. I will just say I really appreciate these two fine gentlemen being so courageous to speak out on these issues, and we are at a point where we have to begin making good decisions, thank you all for listening in, and we welcome the chance to answer any questions you might have later in the day, or let us help any way we can after you have reviewed the materials. Dale or Drew, a final comment?
This is Dale. I just echo Jim's thanks for being interested in this topic, and I look forward to any follow-up questions that you might have.
Yeah, this is Drew, and I just want to say that as both a climate scientist and a ratepayer in North Carolina, I do feel these are very important issues, and glad to have interest from the media in these issues and in trying to do what's right for the citizens and residents of North Carolina as a whole, rather than for exclusively vested interests. So I'm grateful for your attention, and like the others, happy to continue engagement over time. Thanks again.
Thanks very much, everyone. Have a good day.
The conference has now concluded. Thank you for attending today's presentation. You may now disconnect your line.
Okay. Thanks, fellas.
Thank you.
Thank you, Jim. Glad you set this up. Seemed good.